Today on Doomed! A shooting in Portland, and the mainstream media barely covers it. On top of that, the media that does cover it and the reports that do come out create this bizarre media narrative that comes straight from the Portland Police Department that turns out to be completely inaccurate. We're going to talk about everything that's going on here in what's looking to be a far-right shooting that's left one protester dead and wounded as many as, I believe, five. And joining me to discuss is the person who I first saw actually get all this information right. And let me pull us up both on the screen here, because right now I still have the logo on the screen. Joining me now is indie media and activist from Portland, John the Lefty. John, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Now, you were the first person I saw actually really cover this in the way it was meant to be covered when it first went down. You know, I was aware that there was going to be why don't you actually break it down for us? Because you're there, you know better than I do. What were these protests for?
So I actually wasn't there during the shooting. I got there directly after the shooting when the police tape was up and everything. But this is a group that's led by Letha Winston, is the mother of Patrick Kimmons. Patrick Kimmons was shot and killed by the Portland police in 2019 or 18. And she's been having weekly, sometimes bi-weekly marches and rallies since Patrick Kimmons was killed. So every once in a while she'll do a special event. The group is called JFPK, standing for Justice for Patrick Kimmons. There's a good group of people that organize those rallies and marches. And every once in a while, when something big happens, they'll do a special event. In this case, was in response to the killing of Amir Locke. So the event was going to happen in a park in Northeast Portland, starting at 7. And they had the incident actually happened really before the march even occurred. So this man, Ben Smith, came out from an apartment complex that's adjacent to the park, gotten a pretty much started confronting a small group of people that really it was a small group that was away from the actual larger group that was marching. And these people are generally security, traffic control, what we would call corkers, people that make sure to block traffic so cars don't come barreling through the crowd. So they were away from the larger group. And this Ben Smith came up and confronted them, started yelling at them, calling them terrorists, blaming them for the violence in the city. Arguments went on. Somebody tried to get in between Ben and was really a couple small women, one of them being the deceased June Knightley that went by T-Rex, which is a 60-year-old woman. It was her and I think another small woman that he was accosting. And when people decided to come in to try to, pretty much tell him, like, go home, get away, like, quit doing this, he then pulled out a gun and shot June in the head and then shot multiple other people right after that before being shot back by one person that was armed, which neutralized him as a threat. And then police came a while after.
I mean, first of all, I guess let's go through all of that because there's a lot there, and I'm glad you gave everyone that summary up front for anyone just tuning in and wanting to get the lowdown on exactly what occurred. For people who don't know, Amir Locke is I believe he's 22-year-old man who was killed during a no-knock raid in Minneapolis. And you might have seen that video going around of him basically sleeping on the couch under a blanket, and the police come in. We have the footage of their body cameras, and they basically, he jumps up and they basically shoot him. And it's a horrific video really shows exactly how ridiculous these no-knock raids are, and how police are just able to basically come into your home without any idea of who's even coming in your home in the middle of the night while you're half asleep and don't even know what's going on. And then on top of that, you add in the fact that people who were out there demanding justice in the form of peaceful protests through the streets, and we now have another person dead, a 60-year-old woman who you said she was a longtime face at protests in Portland?
Yeah, actually, you know, I know of her. I don't know her personally. But after talking to some other people, I mean, a lot of people became active during the George Floyd protest in Portland. So there's a whole new wave of people. And so sometimes, although the people that are out in the streets, that come out in the streets, their experience, because they dealt with, you know, the chaos of the uprising and the police response, the police violence in response to that, a lot of people are still pretty new. But I had talked to a few people and heard that June actually has been pretty active for years prior to George Floyd. And she has done a lot of, you know, feeding the homeless, mutual aid stuff, and is primarily, in her own words, through on Twitter, was that she became involved in what she was doing at this protest, which is being a corker, making sure, you know, people aren't being hit by cars, is that she started doing that because she realized that there was this vulnerability in the back of these really large marches during the George Floyd uprising, and wanted to make sure that people were safe. And so she started, she became a corker and started helping with, you know, keeping the back of the marches safe. And then eventually just, you know, got connected and helping with this kind of larger team of people that do that work, corking and security and such.
Right, right. Actually, I'm unfamiliar with that term. So basically, it's just like a corker is basically like a traffic control person that right. Like a group of people go down there and make sure. I mean, we've probably all seen them at protests. Like, you know, I'm in New York City, so I've seen, you know, obviously there's a whole march coming forward, and sometimes there's people in the front of the march, sometimes people in the back of the march, some people, you know, within the march, but on the sides, you know, making sure that traffic sees everything and stops, and, you know, just to make sure everyone's safe.
And they're all really amazing at what they do. If you watch them, they're like, you wouldn't know that they weren't paid to do what they do. Like, they're very good. They're good at de-escalation. They're good at making sure that cars that are coming know which way to go and helping reroute them. They're not confrontational, you know, very understanding of even traffic, that, you know, people in traffic, they get upset because the road's blocked off for a second. Where, you know, people like me might be like, you know, fuck off, like, get over it, we'll be out of here in a second. Like, there's bigger issues than you being 3 minutes late for your thing or whatever. So the whole team, the whole what we would call corker team, is really amazing at what they do.
Right. And this might not be the case there, but from my own experience, again, it seems like usually like the elder long-term like activists usually volunteer to do that role, because I don't know, I guess they feel like that's something they're particularly good at. And it seems like this was exactly a way that you could describe, her name is, you mentioned it, June Knightley.
Yeah. Most people know her by T-Rex, but yeah.
T-Rex. Right. I mean, it's such a unbelievable. I mean, sometimes I just say words that feel like it fits, but, you know, then I got to stop myself because it's not unbelievable. You described exactly what this person's, you know, background is, in terms of, when I say this person, I'm talking about the shooter. And we know how the far right is exceedingly getting more dangerous, more violent, in many respects. Even the U.S. government itself has said that, you know, one of the number one threats to the country are actually far right domestic extremists. And here we have this guy, Ben Smith, who you actually, again, you were the first person I saw to ID this guy.
Of course it was a community effort, but yeah, that I was the avenue in publishing his identity for the first time.
Right. Now, without obviously, you know, I'm not asking for sources or anything like that, but could you tell, give us any information, again, while protecting all that that sourcing and stuff? Can you give us any information as to how you were able to out Ben Smith so quickly?
Yes, I'm not going to be able to give you like exact, and I, again, a lot of this work was a community effort, so I'll try my best.
Right.
So he was a registered ham radio. He was registered to use the ham radio, and that's how they first found his address. Was able to make connections to events that he had attended via connected to like the furry community. And then from there, was able to start finding, you know, like his moniker that he used within the furry community. And I think right after that, we found that there were furries and if you don't know the furry community, I don't even want to say much about them because I'm not like up on what the community is about, but it's people that dress as animals. It's a whole kind of cool niche community. And I will give a shout out to them because a lot of identifying Ben came from the furries. And I just want to say, I'm really grateful for y'all. And they historically have done it, from what I'm hearing and talking to people, is that they've historically done a really good job at kicking far right extremists out of their community. Ben Smith was one. He was identified quickly and booted from that community for his history of, you know, talking about killing people pretty much. And the more that we dig, the more that we find that he's been talking about wanting to kill human beings for years. And I would say from what I've picked up and talking to people is that it just recently kind of morphed into wanting to kill Black Lives Matter and Antifa protesters in the last couple of years, where before it was, you know, he just had, you know, wanted to kill people for different reasons.
Right. And I already see in my live stream chat, people have been thrown off by the furry element to this whole story. I think a lot of people, again, the story itself, a shooting perpetrated by a seemingly extremist inspired by, and we'll get into this shortly, various different far-right personalities, especially one in particular that we'll get into, and leaving protesters who were out there protesting for justice for a black man who was shot and killed by police. You know, and then, you know, people don't know about that to begin with. And then we're getting really deep into this here. So, yeah, it seems like so people understand where the furry thing comes from. The reason that furries, the furry community, who, again, like you explained, people who are sort of into the idea of being like humanoid animals, dressing up in animal costumes and stuff. They were able to help identify this individual because Ben Smith, the man who shot and killed the activist in Portland, was a furry himself. And now it seems like, and I've heard about this too, that there are, while it's mainly sort of an open, diverse, even a left-wing space, there is like a hardcore far-right, even like neo-Nazi, white supremacist element, like a element within the larger furry community. I mean, you'll probably find that in a lot of different communities, but in this particular case, someone within that deep far-right community in the furry world was the one who perpetrated this. And go ahead.
So I guess just to add, as far as identifying, we were pretty much at like 99% confirmation of who Ben was. And then I had made a little bit extra effort and went, there was actually two different people that were suspects. We'll call them suspects. And so I ended up went and talked to the father of one of them, and pretty much got enough information to to, you know, cancel him out, which is, you know, the father lived in the house, like, right across from where the killing happened. And then the other person, I ended up going over there to chat with. I found that they had a roommate, and chatted with the roommate, which at the time I was protecting her as a source, because I wasn't sure that they wanted to know that she was talking to people, but she ended up talking to the Oregonian and giving her full name and everything. So I ended up going and talking to her, and she had known the guy for a long time and told me a lot about his history. And she's actually a trans woman that politically is, like, on the other end of the spectrum, and would regularly have to, like, calm him down when he would freak out talking about generally, like, his irritations around Black Lives Matter, Antifa, COVID mandates, things like this. And between talking to her and another witness, they were able to tell me that, yeah, he literally grabbed a gun when he started seeing people gathering, went outside yelling about the protesters gathering, went to a neighbor and told the neighbor to get their gun, and ran out there, and then they heard the shots, and then he never came back. And then later they found that he was in the hospital. So they were able to confirm 100% that yes, it was Ben that did it. And and then I went back last night, and they had, you know, what, last night would have been two nights after the incident, and they were just the police were just executing a search warrant and pulled all of his guns out. He, you know, gun fanatics might not think it's a lot, but when I was watching, it was at least seven long guns and multiple bags of either ammo or handguns, and a small apartment. So that was interesting that it took him that long to do that. And they just identified him this morning after we had already identified him, which is a big thing too. It's like, why did it take you guys so long? So that was how I, you know, 100% confirmed that.
Right. And I just want people to understand how long this was, because this is not usually the case here. Well, you ID'd him on this was, when was the protest again? It was Saturday?
Saturday night.
So that is February 19th. And then you ID'd him shortly after. I have it right in front of me.
ID'd him. His name was thrown around the next day. And since then the 20th. We were able to fully confirm on, you know, 48 hours from the event, pretty much.
So that was,
and then it was a whole nother day before the police identified, which is this morning.
Today, February 22nd. So that's one, two, almost three entire days, you know, full 72 hours for the Portland Police Department to name this individual. Let me stress now, we're dealing with a mass shooter. We can just, you know, I know as horrible as it sounds, every, you know, people might hear one dead and they might think, oh, this is the same as, like, I don't know, some sort of could have been a personal dispute or something. This is a guy who went out and shot at protesters, killing one. And how many were injured? And from what I recall, I think it was five. But from what I recall, some of these are very serious injuries. They're people who are alive and who got shot in the head.
Yeah. So actually, one person is still paralyzed currently. I don't know what that means as far as whether it's like permanent or temporary. Another person was shot in the head. And shot multiple other times in other parts of the body. Multiple people, I think two or three were shot multiple times. I think there's still two in the hospital, and two were released.
Right. And now the shooter, Now the shooter, Ben Smith, he was one of the hospitalized people because he himself got shot. And this was a whole thing. because he opened fire at the protesters, and one of the protesters was armed himself and shot back, shooting Ben Smith, the original shooter. And so when police arrived, they obviously had to take Ben Smith, the shooter, to the hospital because he was injured. But they also arrested and charged the protester who was armed and returned fire. Now we know that that protester is completely exonerated. Police have video. Someone was carrying a GoPro, caught the whole thing on camera. They were able to confirm that the protester who returned fire was indeed defending themselves and the protester, and their gun was legally obtained and carried, and all charges against that protester had been dropped. But the right, when they were trying to control the narrative to this story, were trying to act like there was something more here, where the protester, where there was some sort of back and forth firing, and the protesters could have possibly been the first to fire, and it was a whole big thing. And I believe even like people on the let's get into him now. Andy Ngo, the far right provocateur who fancies himself a journalist when he's anything but, he originally was spreading this this news that the shooter was a black man, and then I think he tried to hint that the shooter that got arrested, who was the black guy, was actually the protester, trying to really enforce the idea that it was the protesters who were in the wrong. Can you break this all down for us and make sure I'm not getting any of this wrong?
Yeah, so I don't know if the black man stemmed, the black man it being a black shooter came from Andy. I believe that came from some other right-wing sources. And that was just strictly based off of that there was somebody booked for murder, too, that was black, that was a 20-year-old man on the same night, 40 minutes from the incident. Anybody that knows Multnomah County knows that once somebody's arrested, the time that it takes for them to be booked and actually on the website takes generally multiple hours, if not a half a day, depending on what's going on. So, you know, us that pay attention to stuff like that knew that that wasn't the person. Andy, I would say, so I guess talking specifically about Andy is that the reason why people find Andy culpable or to blame or have some blame in this is that the week leading up to this event, he was publishing, you know, video and information about some of the protesters that generally are the part of the security team and a part of the Corker team, calling them, you know, far left extremists, calling the leader Letha Winston, you know, a radical extremist, and really demonizing this group based off of one event that happened a while ago, where on one day, you know, Letha has been having these marches, like I said, weekly for 3 years and has had almost no issues, fully peaceful, never, you know, the whole, like, you know, what liberals and conservatives want is like no property destruction, no violence, like just like marches. And so rarely do they have incident. But one day, I don't remember how long ago it was. It was like six months to a year ago. There was one day where two cars barreled through the crowd. And so keep in mind, like, this is a march that has a really good Corker team, really good team in keeping traffic out of the march itself, like keeps the march safe. They have multiple vehicles, multiple bicyclists that make sure traffic is blocked off. So two times in one day, a crowd cars barreled through that and almost hit people in the crowd. One of the times, there was a guy that did it, and it was actually the second time he's done it at a protest in Portland. Same guy tried driving through a march twice in the last year. One time was at an MLK march like a year and a half ago, and then it happened again. This time they stopped him by pulling a gun on him because he was trying to drive through the crowd. And so then he pulled a gun out back on the protesters, and people tackled him and disarmed him. and he ended up going to the hospital for being tackled. And so this is the basis in which Andy paints this whole group as these extremists, and which was just another case of a far-right extremist trying to harm protesters and being responded with, you know, physical restraint. And that's the basis that he uses to shit on this group. And so he was, so there was a video that somebody captured of their security team, and their security team's armed, always armed. I don't know how many there are on their security team. Every once in a while they have long guns. I think majority of them have, you know, pistols on their hip. And they use that video to demonize them. And Andy was putting that out and saying they had a protest coming up. You know, watch out for these far left extremists. And then within a couple of days, the rally happened. And then Ben Smith came out yelling about them being terrorists, was upset about them being armed. Like, all the same stuff that Andy's been saying is kind of like what this guy was repeating as he was yelling at them before he shot people. So that's where, and now Andy is pretty much doing his best to paint the people, the victims, as the perpetrators. And he's really, it's a really losing battle for him, but he's still trying. He's, you know, just in the last couple hours, he's been retweeting things to continue to try to make the victims look like the bad guys.
Right, right. And you know, obviously, this sort of rhetoric comes from a number of far-right actors, everything you just mentioned. So, you know, maybe Ben Smith could have heard this from other, you know, online right-wing personalities who also are like Andy Ngo. That's what people might be saying. However, individuals such as yourself, after IDing Ben Smith, found that, in fact, this Ben Smith guy seemed to have been a pretty big Andy Ngo fan. At least he was Andy Ngo specifically. Looks to be one of the few right-wing figures that this guy followed on various different online platforms.
Yeah, so if the only thing that we've found for sure is that he's a follower of Andy on YouTube, but also one of the couple people that live in the apartment complex with, or lived with Ben Smith in that complex, had stated verbatim, he's a big Andy Ngo fan. So we have people that actually know him that have made this report. Outside of that, like, we don't have a Facebook profile for him. We don't have an Instagram profile for him. We don't have a Twitter profile for him. So we don't really know, like, we just know that he followed him on YouTube currently.
Right. I mean, I'm someone on, I'm in New York, so I'm on the left coast. I'm on the right. No, what am I saying? I'm on the right coast. You guys are on the left coast. And so I have been very lucky to avoid Andy Ngo in my, you know, every day when I go out to events, there's no Andy Ngo presence there. And I think people who don't live in, you know, on the West Coast and haven't been to protests in, for example, Portland, might not quite understand just how pervasive the Andy Ngo, not just him, but his followers and the people who believe in what he says and end up showing up to counter protest, how much they've affected really all these different protests going on over there, it seems.
Yeah, I mean, Andy, you know, after he was assaulted in 2019, I think he stopped showing up as much, and I believe he's in the UK now. That's one of the other frustrating things, is that he has really gained a lot of following over the last couple of years by, you know, spewing his propaganda around the George Floyd uprising and being looked at as this, like, on the ground reporter. I could be wrong, but I was out at, like, almost every night at those protests, covering those protests. And as far as I know, Andy Ngo showed up to two protests the whole time. So he's not somebody that actually knows what's going on the ground. The last time he was assaulted again by a small group of people in Black Block, and he was in Black Block. He showed up in Black Block. He was wearing a Black Lives Matter flag around his shoulders, and people spotted him and chased him down and tackled him. Sucks, but like that. My point is that was like the second time that he was out in Portland. He's not somebody that's actually on the ground knowing what's going on.
Right. You know, that's not surprising, but it's also interesting how he's continued the facade that's like, because, you know, if you're someone who's in the UK and you want to report, I should put around quotes, on these protest events, and you're no longer simply covering things from your on the ground perspective, you think you just cover a swath of areas. Like, why isn't Andy Ngo fixated on protests that happen in New York City every day? And I wonder if he's just trying to continue the facade that people know him as being this West Coast right-wing journalist guy. And if, like, him just reporting on that stuff, in his opinion, keeps that mindset that, oh, Andy must be on the ground there. We know that's where he lives. You know what I mean? Like, that is really interesting to me. I never even considered that, because he doesn't talk about anything that happens, protests elsewhere in the U.S. It only seems to be around, like, you know, I guess Portland and things popping, I guess, in elsewhere in, like, California or Oregon or Washington.
Yeah, I mean, he reports on all over the place, but I would say probably 90% of the time it's Portland.
Right. And so now I really need to do a full-on episode about Andy Ngo, because there's much more to go into. But let's move on to and the final thing I wanted to talk about. One last thing, if you have a few more minutes. This to me was the most egregious thing I've ever seen, because I truly had to wonder, what is the relevance here? And there's so many ways that they would try. There's so many ways they could use this label, this title, this framing, to sort of make it seem like the shooter, Ben Smith, was in the right. And knowing what we know now, it's even more bizarre. When reports finally did come out, local media, I saw Reuters, a number of media that actually did cover this shooting started framing this as, I think the Reuters headline was something like, homeowner clashes with protesters in Portland. Homeowner. That's how they were framing Ben Smith. And I've never seen that before, I guess. And maybe it's happened before, but I've never seen that, especially where it's not something that occurred in the man's home. This wasn't like a break-in or a fight or a scuffle that happened on his front porch or something. This happened blocks away from where he lived. And we now know he wasn't even a homeowner. But even if he was, what the idea, I mean, I'm trying to consider why they would put this forward that, I don't know, a homeowner is somehow more of an upstanding citizen. They have more stronger ties to a community than a dirty renter or tenant. Like, I'm really trying to understand. It's such a bizarre framing.
Yeah. And I'm sure you know this, but the framing, the terminology came from the Portland police.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's an issue that we have, especially with, like, our, I don't even want to call them news outlets, but our local media, K2, Coin, KGW, they, like, literally, I've seen them put out articles where it's literally the press release from the Portland police. That's the only thing that they say in the article. Like, they don't dissect or even push back against what the police say. They just literally will copy and paste. And it's one of the frustrations that we have. And so that's what happened there. And then once some local media says it, then the national will repeat them. I mean, the homeowner thing is, I mean, a lot of us are, whether it's intentional or not, it definitely like helped paint this picture that it's a quote unquote responsible homeowner that like obviously had to have not been the instigator. And so then we found out, it's, you know, not that it makes a difference, that he's a resident in an apartment complex. There actually aren't even really any homes in that area. They're almost all duplexes and apartments, which is also interesting. They also, the Portland police definitively made a statement that he doesn't have political affiliations, which we could argue might be technically correct because, yeah, he's not a Proud Boy and he's not a, you know, a member of Adam Waffen or anything like that. But he definitely has been a part of a community of people that are constantly politically talking about committing violence against, you know, people that they disagree with. So it definitely was politically motivated. And I would also not argue if somebody said that he has political affiliations, because he was a part of a very small group of far right furries. And again, I want to make clear that small faction of furries does not represent the community as a whole. But there definitely was some affiliation there, and right. They were booted. They tried to have a convention, and the furry community was like, no, there's not going to be any Nazi, you know, they call it the Nazi con. It was a convention that they tried to having with it was where it was just primarily far right folks. So that was a lie. And now they're saying things like, they believe that evidence was taken from the scene, but in the press conference today, we asked questions about like, what evidence do you have? Did you see somebody take something? Do you have video of them taking something? Where is this coming from? They're also putting out the stuff around, you know, that the protesters were uncooperative, that it was hectic, it was chaotic, that most people left without giving statements to the police. This literally was a protest against the police, primarily of people that don't trust the police, that don't want to go be like, my name is blah, blah, blah. Here's my address and my phone number and my statement. Like, it's of course they're not going to want to talk to you. And then also, like, they did get footage from protesters. They do have footage from the buildings around. And they're acting like they don't have any evidence. And I think people may have seen now the new OPB article, which is the reason why the person that shot back, the hero, shot back. There's video footage that that came from the protester that shows that it was a clear self-defense case. So there's just a lot of outright like lies or inaccuracies and a lot of misleading things to really paint this small crew of people as being like, don't want to work with the police, that they're hiding something. Like, that's the whole purpose of this. But the video that the DA and the feds and the police watched now show that they actually weren't hiding anything, that it was exactly what they've been saying, which they got accosted and shot up by some right-wing extremists. And luckily, there was somebody that was armed that was able to shoot him back.
Right. And even and honestly, in some aspects, too, not only thankfully someone was armed with a firearm and able to protect the themselves and the protesters, thankfully someone was armed with video evidence, so that someone was armed with a camera, so that the police would have no way to distort what exactly happened. And, you know, otherwise, who knows? We might be seeing, if it wasn't for that video evidence, we might be seeing the guy who defended the protesters still being charged. Who knows?
Yeah. You can still hear me?
Yeah. It sounds even okay, better, cool. Actually, somehow.
And, you know, the other thing that people were upset about the night of, for some of the people that were there, is that it was our street medics that actually provided medical aid to the dude that killed people. And when the police got there, they were yelling at the people like holding pressure on his gun wound is what they were doing. They were keeping dude alive. And the police came and started yelling at the street medics to get off of the dude so they can arrest him. Before they didn't know who he was. I don't even know if the people present knew who he was. They just saw somebody was shot. They wanted to apply pressure and provide medical aid. And the police were like, get the fuck off of him. We're arresting him. And so that was something that really was disturbing also about the way that the police came in
And the video that did get released that people took down was the aftermath of multiple people laying in this in the street with gunshot wounds. And people asked them to remove it because we didn't want gory details and things that identify the protesters being out there. And the right wing took a hold of that and said they're trying or that we're trying to hide evidence, which is not the case. But if you watch that video, you can see that every single person that is providing medical aid is a street medic, not the police. And the police are all first responders. They all have the ability to provide medical aid, and they were not. So that's the other thing is, like, they just, like, stood around worrying about whatever they were trying to figure out and weren't actually providing any kind of medical aid to the people that were potentially dying.
Now, apparently, I'm reading something that you retweeted. Apparently, people, again, within the furry community have been aware of Ben Smith, who went by Polybun, for it seems like quite some time, not just like a year or two, but we're talking like years. In some cases, it seems like going back decades. Someone said they've been aware of who this person was since 2007 and how they had reported their threats to police previously.
Yep. Which I just became aware of just earlier today. And I think we're going to have to do a public records request and see what kind of police reports and what kind of response. I guarantee there's going to be some police reports and there's probably going to be no response. There's probably going to be no follow-ups.
Right. And we should say that.
That's kind of what happens.
Right. And we should say that the shooter, Ben Smith, has been charged with murder 2, attempted murder 1 with a firearm, 4x4, assault with a firearm, the 4 counts. But he still hasn't been booked, obviously, because he's still in the hospital. This is incredible, an incredible story. It's unbelievable from the very get-go how this was framed. I don't think I'll ever get over the homeowner thing. Like, there are a number of straight-up lies that have come from various police departments throughout the country over the years that have stuck with me. Like, just like the egregiousness. For example, like in Minneapolis when they tried to paint the protesters in the wake of George Floyd as mostly from being out of town. They're provocateurs from out of town. And then you had the infamous case in New York. Well, there's a number, but one that always sticks with me is the New York City cops who basically harassed a bunch of fast food workers after they claimed that they poisoned their milkshake or something. And then an investigation found out that wasn't the truth, even after they had reported to the media that they were poisoned by these fast food workers. This is up there. This homeowner thing is up there because the bizarre framing that this – because it's true, though. Like, people in this country, sadly, probably heard homeowner and probably thought – oh, this was a guy defending his property. And we could obviously talk about the ridiculous idea of, like, that means you can just shoot and kill someone, period, to begin with. But people in this country, for the most part, believe that, you know, if someone is breaking into your home or on your property, you have a right to shoot to kill. And that's how that sounds when they use the word homeowner, had to fire shots at protesters. And it's just unbelievable that was how this was framed and how it went across for days. And then your most recent update that I'm reading on Twitter right now is that Andy Ngo attempted to ID the guy who saved, without a doubt, saved multiple people from getting shot by returning fire to Ben Smith.
Yeah. He definitely put out his name, but the tweet's deleted now. So I did not archive it or, screenshot it. There's a couple other, right wingers that have also done it. I'm not going to mention their name because I don't need to give it air, but they're pretty much naming him. And then the way that they word it is he was the Antifa or anti-fascist was involved in a shooting that led to 5 injured and 1 dead. So it makes it sound like he was responsible for the shootings. Very gross.
They are trying to get this guy killed. There's absolutely no reason for this guy to be ID'd if he doesn't want to put his name out there. In fact, this is the exact perfect example that the right, this is like the perfect hero for the right in what they always say, right? A good guy with a gun can stop a bad guy with a gun. Like, even if you disagree with the protest and the protesters, you don't align with them ideologically, there is no doubt about it that Ben Smith was the aggressor and he was the bad guy with the gun. And this unidentified protester who was legally carrying a legal firearm, according to the Portland Police Department, who've dropped all charges against him, this is their perfect, this is their savior. This is the exact, like, the NRA should be using this guy's example to continue to say how every household should have a gun. But of course, that's not going to be what's happened. I mean, all the shows that have been inviting Kyle Rittenhouse on, so they could go and talk about how what a great guy Kyle really is. I mean, they should be trying to reach this guy or girl.
Ben Smith was also a big fan of Kyle, too.
Oh, makes sense. Of course.
Of course.
But, you know, do you think we'll see Tucker Carlson try to reach out to this protester and, you know, use him as a great example of, a good guy with a gun stopping a bad guy? Of course not. Of course not. But, you know, that's, you know, it really, things like this really lift any veil that's still, and any, you know, it's not even a veil anymore. There's not even a see-through curtain anymore. I mean, it's as transparent can be what people like, you know, Andy Ngo and the guns rights people on the right are all about. And, you know, it's really extremely unfortunate that this poor woman who went by the lovely moniker T-Rex lost her life over simply being on public streets. Like, they weren't even they weren't even agitating anybody. They were literally starting a peaceful march down the street. And this guy just had a problem with them being there. Wasn't even his neighborhood. Wasn't even in front of his home as a homeowner. Like, unbelievable. Is there anything else you'd like to say or add, John? I really appreciate you joining me tonight.
That's everything I could think about that's important off the top of my head. I mean, I guess the one thing that I will say is that it's going to be interesting to follow the details of kind of how things unfold as far as on the police, Portland police's side, because they're making claims and accusations that I feel I would put money on that are going to show to be inaccurate. So just paying attention to that. Things as such as they know that evidence was taken from the scene. It's going to be interesting to see like what unfolds around that. And then just like watching their response. And I mean, I got the other thing that a lot of us are like, why did it take 3 days? It's really abnormal for them to take three days to identify just a shooter in general, let alone a mass shooter. And me being somebody that gives the police more benefit than they should get, and thinking like, maybe like, because we're pretty sure this dude's on his deathbed. We know he's in critical condition. So maybe they're thinking like, he might die and they want to see if he dies, and then they'll notify next of kin and then they'll release his name. That's what I'm thinking, right? Maybe that's why they're holding off. But then we put out his name and he's still in critical condition. He's still in the hospital, and then they release his name. So like, obviously my rationale that I had is not true. So why? And we asked today, why did you take 3 days to release his name? They did not respond to the question. They avoided it. So we still don't know the answer to that. And they're also saying that they're not releasing the name of the victim because they haven't talked to the victim's family. Why have you not talked to the victim's family? It's been 3 days. You know who the person is that died, that was killed. Why have you not made contact? Have you contacted the family of the shooter? Like, have you guys done anything, you know? So that's a huge frustration.
Right. It's, you know, from every aspect of this is truly fucked up. I mean, from the what happened, from who the shooter is and who are, you know, who he was clearly inspired by, the people on the right, such as Andy Ngo, who are still spreading straight up disinformation about what happened, while at the same time trying to get the activists on the ground who helped in the situation literally personally harmed. And, you know, the police role, the framing of this, how the media didn't cover this, and the media that did cover it just lapped up the police narrative straight up without even really just doing any due diligence. Like, I could see not knowing what was going on and trying to parse what was going on, but I can't think of a single reason for them to have used the term homeowner. It's just still, it'll be something that will forever frustrate me. Independent journalist and activist John the Lefty, thank you so much for joining me at the last minute. For people who don't know, I reached out to John. He saw my message literally as I was about to go live, and we were able to make this work. I can't thank you enough for getting back to me and joining me down to the wire here. Please let people know anything you want to plug, whether, you know, your or any site you have with your work or Twitter account or other social media profile. Please, the floor is yours.
Yeah, you could follow me on Twitter, John the Lefty. It's JOHNN, so two N's, the Lefty. And I would love to shoot you over some links of way to financially support those of them that have been injured and June that has passed. I don't know that off the top of my head, so it would be cool if I could shoot that over to you later. Maybe you could spread the word.
Yes,
and then
absolutely.
On Facebook, it's Full Rev Media or Full Revolution Media. Same on YouTube. But yeah.
You send me those links, and for everyone who's listening, whether it be to the live stream or the podcast that'll be released shortly after, the links to where you can donate will be in the description of the show, and I'll also share them on Twitter. So definitely check that out. Thanks so much for joining me tonight, John the Lefty. Have a great night.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye. All right, folks, we are going to open up the phone lines in a minute. I will take calls. I really wanted to cover this because I could not get over that homeowner thing. It was so frustrating to me. What would it have been different if this guy was if they knew from the get-go this guy was a renter, a tenant, a dirty, rotten, filthy tenant? Does a tenant not have a right to their home? And again, that's not even what happened here. Does a homeowner have extra claim to the public streets of a neighborhood and the areas directly outside of a neighborhood? Again, because this didn't happen even in front of this guy's building. The insinuation there really, really pissed me off. Especially knowing that, like, you know, who is a homeowner nowadays? The vast majority of people of my generation and younger are not. Are we all going to be automatically seen as our lives slightly worth less? At the very least, worth slightly less? Because we don't own a home? So bizarre, you know, and obviously this is a show that covers the far right and all the different worlds that surround it, conspiracy theories, misinformation, and this story just ticked so many boxes that I needed to get on this. No one was, obviously there were a number of outlets that jumped onto it now recently over the past day or so. But I wanted to talk with someone who is on the ground and knows the scene there. And, you know, John, again, this, my guest tonight was the person who identified, he's the first person who went public. Now, again, he credited a number of people who helped him with it, but he is the person who first went public with Ben Smith's name. And in a thread on his Twitter, proceeded to go through his background as being a member of the fascist furry community. And I want to really stress fascist furry community, because the furry community as a whole is not the equivalent. In fact, again, as John said, without furries, Ben Smith probably would not have been identified by activists at least a full day before Portland PD decided to release a name. All right, folks, I'm going to go to the second half of the show where I will take calls. The Skype username is Doomed Live. I take any and all calls. I don't care if you agree with me or not. Everyone knows I'm a true believer in free speech. I am probably the most legit free speech activist, being that I will talk to any and all callers. I literally take calls from anyone. No screening beforehand. Just open up your Skype app and call in Doomed Live. Search Doomed Live, I should say, and my username will pop up and you could call in. I have to log into that phone line, so give me a second. Also, to support this show, subscribe to the YouTube channel if you're watching the live stream right now, youtube.com/MattBinder. If you're over on Twitch, follow on Twitch, twitch.tv/MattBinder. If you're on YouTube and already subscribed to the YouTube, you should go over and follow the Twitch. If you're watching on Twitch and already follow the Twitch, you should go over and subscribe to the YouTube. If you'd like to financially support this show, patreon.com/MattBinder. You basically support all the work I do, Doomed, and also my new show on the world of cryptocurrency, NFTs, and Web3, which I've called Scam Economy. Scameconomy.com for all the links to that show. It's been getting rave reviews. I've been getting a lot of invites to go on shows. I was on Busy Phillips's podcast 2 weeks ago, talking about Scam Economy and breaking down crypto for Busy Phillips. I will let you guys know about other shows I'm going to be on shortly. For this show though, doomedcast.com for all the podcast links you need for Doomed. And if you can, for either or, should I say either and or, Doomed and Scam Economy, feel free to leave reviews on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. I can tell you from Scam Economy's time on those charts, those reviews help shoot these shows up those Spotify and Apple Podcast charts, which in turn help people discover the shows, which in turn gets this content in front of a larger audience. Thank you for that. And did I say patreon.com/MattBinder to financially support this show? I can't remember, but patreon.com/MattBinder to help support this show. You can also, let me shout out the new patrons who have joined since the last episode of the show. Let me go back a few days and let's start here. Oboe, Eric N., Haxor, Mike D., Charles T., David L., Connor V., Pepper, Alexis A., Brian A., Andrew R., John B., Dwayne B., Muriel C., Miguel F., The Archangel, and Daniel H. Thank you so much for supporting this show by becoming patrons. Also, if you're on the YouTube live stream, you could simply drop a super chat. I will 100% read your super chat, and it's a good way to give a one-off donation to this program. That's youtube.com/MattBinder. Twitch.tv, if you're a Amazon Prime member, you can send me a free Amazon Prime subscription. Twitch Prime subscription, I should say. What does that mean? That means that if you subscribe to Amazon Prime, you can basically, once a month, take $5 out of Jeff Bezos' pocket for no extra cost to you, other than your Amazon Prime subscription, and give it to me. It's like your Robin Hood. Literally, your Robin Hood. Taking from Bezos, given to me. Just simply connect your Twitch account to your Amazon Prime account. And every month, you just have to resubscribe. It's a free Twitch Prime subscription. Twitch.tv/MattBinder. Free for you. Gives me money. Takes money from Jeff Bezos. It's a win, win, win. All right, folks, we're going to go to that second half of the show now. Doomed Live on Skype. Just open up Skype, go to Doomed Live. If you're watching live, you can stick around. Just give me a second to open up those phone lines. If you're a patron, you can stick around. You know that. And also get the audio version of the second half of the show. If you're a freebie listener who's not watching live, this is where the free show ends. And I will see you next time on Doomed.